I'm gonna hit record. I just did. You can't stop it now, Phil. Phil, don't shake your head. You have to speak words.
I'm reeling from the banana ketchup yesterday. Eish.
I don't know what that means.
The Philippines had a ketchup shortage during the war, so they made their own ketchup made out of bananas, and Pearlie brought some home.
Okay.
It's disgusting.
It's June 17th. Does anyone want to go, how did it get to be June 17th? When is the 21st? Is it
4 days.
So Monday we'll be here. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we'll call the show Father's Day Weekend. Yeah. June 17th, Father's Day Weekend. Share on your timeline. Share to your page. Share. Phil, do you like to share?
I'd like to share the joy in the love.
Joy in the where?
The love.
Phil, do you ever come to your job and share some love at your workplace?
Oh, once in a while.
I bet you do.
I also bring some work, too.
Yeah. All right. All right, Phil, here you go.
All right, the following episode of Humble and Fred is brought to you by the Retirement Sherpa. Gig Sky, the Chambers Plan, Clear Air Solutions, Palma Pasta, Safe Deck Security, NextHome.ca, DraftKings, Red Light Holland, City Parent, and our newest sponsor, HealthGate, providing digital solutions to improve health outcomes. If you'd like to talk to Humble and Fred, our Instagram account is Humble and Fred Radio. And now for the remote headquarters of the Humble and Fred Show, here are Humble and Fred.
Chef Jordan Wegman, James Beard nominated chef and host of In the Weeds. I got a couple barbecue questions for him. Big barbecue weekend, Father's Day weekend. And, yeah. Dan Duran, Michael Boone will be on the program. Another guy I know who just got his second AZ jab. Everyone's got an opinion about that.
Yes, it seems that way, doesn't it? I'm just reading an article here, and the article is what a lot of us have been thinking. Why is the United States so open and Canada not? And I didn't know this. In the States, they said once you have... you're fully vaccinated, you should be pretty much free to do what you want, sort of on an individual basis. We're here, we're still waiting, you know, to that, I guess, herd situation,
mm-hmm.
where they didn't really take that strategy in the United States. But again, you know, watching the Jays in Buffalo last night, you know, stands full. Vegas, the hockey game, packed to the rafters.
Apparently, you were saying the other day that those stinking Yankee fans in Buffalo, which you can understand,
yeah.
Booing.
Yeah, even last
yeah,
night.
Booing the Jays.
Yeah, because they were, you know, bottom of the ninth. They're down 3-2, you know, two out, two strikes. You know, that's when the crowd stands and cheers on the stopper, yeah. reliever, pitcher. And sure. That's what was happening. It sucked.
Yeah,
they got to get them home. I don't know why they can't play at the Rogers Center now. They're fully vaxxed. I've said this a million times.
I know you have. Canada is now fully vaccinated 16.88% of the country's eligible population. And yesterday, there was quite a nice moment at Toronto General Hospital in the ICU. There's a nice video going around. Go check it out on your social media. Do you have social media, Phil?
I have antisocial media.
Yeah. Apparently yesterday, the ICU at Toronto General for the first time since March 26th of 2020 was COVID-free. Now, I know you don't think that is an answer to what you were talking about, but I bring it up because we're lagging behind in terms of our openings and such, but we're not far away. If you can just not compare us to other, you know, places, we're not far away from being, you know, pretty no. free and easy around here.
Right. Yeah, there's just some questions around the government, federal, in this situation.
Yeah.
Where the roadmap hasn't been laid out a little more clear. But again, I you know, it's new to everyone. I mean, yeah, they could look at the States and follow that model, but it's new to Canada, new to our situation. You know, our regions are different. Our situations are slightly different. So they're trying to figure it out.
Now we're,
you know, generally we're doing all right. We're getting there.
I'm not 100% sure, Phil, and you can maybe fact check this. We shouldn't even call it fact checking. We should just call it Phil checking. Hey, can you Phil check this?
Oh, I'm fact checking.
Maybe we could sell that. This Phil fact check brought to you by Red Light Holland. Now I can't remember what I was going to ask him to check. Oh, that we're more vaccinated than the States.
We did surpass the States.
In overall vaccinations given as a percentage of the population, at least first dose. Anyone? No?
No, that's true, but not second dose.
No, I know. I said that.
Second
first dose
are way higher.
No. Yeah, but, you know, we... It's all about the second dose. So I guess that's why, you know, in Vegas, it's full of people last night. I guess you assume all those people have been double vaccinated.
Yeah, what was going on in Vegas last night, Fred? Was there an event of some kind?
Montreal, Canadian.
Well, I'm sorry. Was there a hockey game in June? How dare these people? Don't they know that June is...
Hey, forget hockey. Am I being fair? For the first time in my life, I'm sort of excited about a soccer game. Like an international soccer game.
No, I understand what you're talking about.
Yeah, like, there's TFC and stuff. It's Toronto, but not of the same magnitude. And then yesterday, Canada qualifies for World Cup qualifying for the first time since 98, which was good. They beat Haiti 3-0.
Guy, you know what?
How does Haiti field a team?
They can, and they're good.
No.
You know what? Haiti are the Habs of soccer to me.
Yeah. But really, I mean, that poor island. I mean,
they've been through so much. So much.
Mudslides.
So what is the game you're excited about? Canada v...
And, no, neighbor John got me all excited because tomorrow at 3 p.m., right, England plays Scotland.
Uh-oh.
At the Euro.
Nice.
And it's just listening to him, it's like, I'm gonna watch it. I mean, he has such a deep hatred for the English. It's funny, right?
Yeah.
it's great.
Well, that's right. English are the Habs of the islands.
That's right.
Yes.
So, you know, and as he says, Scotland traditionally always has good players, but whenever they come together, and their players play all over the world, but whenever they come together, they don't seem to be able to put it together, much like the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yeah.
But he is so excited tomorrow, and I said to him, I said, will you be wound up about this like you would Team Canada play in Russia? And he said, you know what? More.
Yeah.
He said, because we always sort of expect Canada to win, but in this case, Scotland will be the underdog. He said, yeah, it'll be nuts. He said, like, I'll be... You know what? He said he'd be on the edge of his seat. He'll be on the edge of his seat.
He won't need the full seat.
You won't, yeah, that's what I was trying to think of, yeah.
I mean, listen, you have fun watching that tomorrow. I'll be watching a little thing called the U.S. Open. But I must say that in 2018 summer, whatever that soccer event was in, maybe that was Euro, I don't know, but Charlie and I, daughter Charlie, sweet angel Charlie and I were in France, and we watched the last 20-ish minutes of France versus, I don't remember, doesn't matter. But we were on this, we were in, I want to say Nice. And this whole boulevard was just outdoor restaurants and bars and a sea of people in France watching their soccer team. And when their soccer team scored the first time, the noise was like being next to a jet. When the game was over and France won, I got to tell you, one of my favorite sporting moments that I witnessed, only because of the feeling in the crowd. Like, it was amazing. And it was great. And it's funny because when we got to that area, I said to Charlie, we have to stay here. And Charlie likes soccer. I said, I just want to be here if these guys win. I want to see what that's like.
Well, that's a great experience. I 2018, I would imagine that was the World Cup.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't follow it.
And, well, I don't either, but I'm just...
No, I think you do. I think you secretly follow soccer.
2018, I think, would be the World Cup, and if they were that wound up. Yeah, so I'm excited, and you know, and I get you're going to be watching the U.S. Open.
Yes,
come
I
on,
am.
The first round.
No, it's this first round is today. Don't be. Don't pretend you don't know when the first round is. Stop it.
Whatever.
What do you mean, whatever?
It doesn't mean anything.
It means everything. It's four rounds of a competition.
What do they call? What do they call Saturday? There's a term.
Moving day.
Moving day.
Yeah.
And then what? And then what is Sunday?
Sunday is Sunday. Day of rest.
We're at home day. We've arrived day.
Brooding day.
New home day.
It's a day of rest, brother. Hey, you know what though? Every day, more and more people across Ontario are receiving their COVID-19 vaccine. Health Canada approved vaccines are conveniently available in hospitals, doctors' offices, pharmacies, and mass vaccination sites. Every dose brings us closer to what we've missed. So join millions of Ontarians, do your part, and get your shot dead. Visit Ontario.ca/bookvaccine, paid for by the government of Ontario. Although there is conflicting information, Fred, you reported to me this morning before the program that Eric Clapton, famed songwriter and legendary rock and roller, is now saying, "Ooh, hold on a second, vaccine." even though he got the vaccine.
Yeah, it's a long interview. It's out there on your internet. And, of course, the anti-vaxxers are cherry-picking it. Oh, look what Eric Clapton had to say. The guy who used to stick needles in his arm for fun.
Yeah, that's right. Layla.
And it's like, doctors, brain surgeons and neurosurgeons, yeah. They've all maintained that, en masse, generally, overwhelmingly, there's nothing wrong with the vaccines. But I'd rather listen to Eric Clapton, to be honest.
Oh, no, especially because he did the Layla, and then he did the acoustic version of the Layla. Eric, can you do the Layla and make the vaccine, make the virus go away?
And what else did he do, Howard?
Pardon me?
And what else did he do?
He did all kinds of things. He did George Harrison's wife. How about that?
Okay. That's good. That was a good comeback. Right now, what's taking place on the Humble and Fred show is a little inside joke. Prior to the show, Howard said something very off color about Eric Clapton and something that happened in his life.
All right.
I chastised him because I thought it was over the line, even off the air. So now I'm calling him on it during the show to see how he can wiggle out of it. And he did a pretty good job.
That pretty much sums it up. So, yeah, here's what happened. You tell me the story about Eric Clapton and your little joke was, oh, yeah, this is from a guy who put heroin needles into his eye. And I said, why should we listen to him? He can't even. And then I said something horrible about something
horrible
that happened. And you actually went too far. I want to play you guys some audio. It's about, 50 seconds. I got it off TikTok. I love TikTok. Phil, do you TikTok? Are you a TikToker? Do you TikTok? They should sell. Phil, they should sell Tic Tacs on TikTok.
Oh, yes. I'm more into Tic Tacs than TikTok.
Anyway, what the first part of this is going to go by really quickly. So this is a reactor video. They call them whatever. I think they're called reactor videos. So a guy who is obviously a conservative kid is sort of saying, oh, the government, they want you to do this. And then this kid who's about to be like late teens, early 20s, basically breaks down the anti-vax kind of movement. So just have a listen and then you can react to the reacting. Here we go.
Left's like, Trump's a fascist, he's an authoritarian.
So what this guy is saying, all the left is like, Trump's a fascist, he's an authoritarian.
And now they're like,
you need to get vaccinated. Okay, so did you hear that? So this guy is saying, of course the left whines about Trump, and now the left is saying you need to get vaccinated. And hear this kid's response.
I mean, saying before the election that the only way you'll lose is if it's rigged, and then losing, and then trying to overturn those results, it's kind of textbook fascism, but I don't know about you. Also, I don't know what planet you're on, but the government is not requiring you to get vaccinated. Like, no one's going to arrest you if you don't get vaccinated. Mm-hmm. Is your life kind of going to suck? Are you going to be able to, fly on a plane, go to a restaurant? Maybe not. And do I care? No. But that's just not fascism or authoritarianism. Flying on an airplane or seeing a movie or going to a restaurant are not, constitutionally protected rights. If private businesses want to mandate a vaccine to use their services or enter their establishment, that's well within their right. And the fact that, once again, you don't want to take simple precautions to keep yourself and others safe doesn't make them a fascist. It makes you a fucking idiot. No one's forcing you to get vaccinated. You'll just miss out on opportunities.
So that isn't that great? That kid, I don't even think he's 20. You know? Isn't that great? No one's saying you have to do anything. You know, we all did, so you can be safe, and ICUs will be open, so when you get into, you know, a car accident for distracted driving while you're trying to put your fucking, Garth Brooks 8-track, you know, in, the ICU will be there because we all got vaccinated. What?
Yeah. Your Garth Brooks 8-track. That sums up anti-vaxxers.
You know, while you're trying to hit fast forward on your fancy CD.
Believe me, if a Garth Brooks 8-track was the trait of an anti-vaxxer, there wouldn't be that many of them.
I know. I was just like, you know what? I was in the middle of that mini rant and I couldn't think of anything else. But no, seriously, like, we all did our part. You know, I had a great conversation with your wife last night. She's great to talk to. Have you ever talked to her?
She says.
He says, hi. Yeah. So it says to Dahl last night.
Back during the last World Cup, I think we had a conversation.
But even to, you know, Delisa and I were talking about it, you know, like, you know, you just do it. And sure, there's questions. We all have questions. It's not like we're, you know, it's not like the vaxxers are moronic robots just following blindly without questioning and wondering and thinking, oh, you know, like the conversation I had with your wife was about, you know, people mixing and matching vaccinations and the efficacy of, you know, first doses. And, you know, she was very informed and we had a conversation. She's not just blindly going to do it, but, oh, you know, again, it's all, we're, as David and my brother said, we're all doing this, you know, for the community.
Yeah, as I say to her, I would just get the AstraZeneca, the second one.
That's what I told her. I said, given a choice. Yeah, she's got a choice, though.
I'm not pleading with her, or it's just, you know, if you want my advice, I'd just keep it the same. However, I'm reading another story here. Bruce Springsteen's going back to Broadway, and they're not going to allow anyone into the theater that's been vaccinated with AstraZeneca. They're only going to recognize the ones that have been approved by the FDA.
And that to me, again, that's their prerogative, and it seems a bit, I don't know. I mean, was it somebody, I don't know where they got that information. Phil, what were you going to say?
Oh, yeah, I was about to say that about Canadians, because there are folks who are complaining outside the country because they've taken vaccines from Russia or China, and Canada's basically saying, if we don't recognize the vaccine, you're not coming in without a quarantine. So it's sort of like the Bruce Springsteen example, but amplified.
Again, I don't know what to say about that. What do you think about that, Freddie?
Well, I just hope it doesn't become a thing, because I'm a double. I've got the double Z.
Well, so do I.
The double AZ.
Well, you know, I think they're going to work that out. I would have to assume at some point. We're all, because a huge cohort of people around the planet have been AZO vaccinated.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not really going to make up my final. I'm not going to make my final decision on any of this until I hear what Paul McCartney has to say, though, to be honest.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Well, listen, I don't. I only listen to Eric Clapton. You can listen to McCartney, yeah.
No, it's going to take McCartney to win me over.
You know, yeah, Rachel found she was supposed to get jabbed about 3 weeks from now, just before we went to the cottage, and so she's trying to find a place to do it before we go away. And I was kind of surprised, because she was AZO first shot, and she was talking about getting another brand on the second shot, and I really didn't have much of a discussion with her. I just said, oh, I guess, you know, my feeling would, why not get the same one? But if you think it's better or you want to get another one, fine, get it. Do it. I don't care.
But that could lead to another problem based on the story we heard yesterday. Based on the story we heard yesterday that, mixing up your doses may not be recognized by some places, people either, because it'll be considered double one dose.
Or partially. Well, I told you a couple days ago, I think, that there was a story out of Denmark or Norway. Is Denmark in... Is Denmark in Norway? I don't know.
Denmark's its own country.
Yeah, I think so. Right, I was right. It just sounded weird for a second. So Denmark, one of those countries, won't take AZO people at all.
Mm-hmm. Most of your pornography originated in Denmark. They were really the first to step forward with PornG.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, that if from what I understand, they have like plaques all over the place that say pioneers in porn.
It was too cold to go outside, so...
Welcome to Norway, pioneers in porn. No,
Denmark, Howard.
Oh, Denmark. Welcome to Denmark, pioneers in porn. All right, well, you would know because you researched back in the 70s.
My thesis.
Oh, I'm sorry, thesis porn, that's Germany. you said thesis. Oh, I thought you were talking about feces. Yeah, the Germans love the Scheiße porn.
They don't let any vaccine in unless it's Scheiße.
Scheiße. Yeah, that's right. You got the Scheiße shot. Yeah, we only accept Scheiße. That's really funny, Phil. Thank you. Hey, Phil, and just because you're a sweet angel boy, I'm going to play a little bit of one of your favorite artists here while Fred tells us about the Chamber Plan.
Yes, the Chambers of Commerce Group Insurance Plan, Canada's number one group benefits plan for small business. I've told you before, and I'm going to tell you again.
Tell us again, please.
Go to chamberplan.ca. You can get a free quote today if you have a small business and benefits package is something that you can now consider. This is it. This is it. 30,000 Canadian businesses are part of this. They've been around 40 years. It really makes a lot of sense. Again, all these small businesses get together. They create the image of a huge company. It makes, you know, all the premiums doable for small business. Of course, that's a major consideration. And because of this system, they've done a pretty good job of keeping premiums under control over the past few years. You can, I mean, it's there to be seen once you go to chamberplan.ca. It will all be explained how this works for your small business. Very simple to sign up. It's stable. Again, been around 40 years. Come on. And it's the smart thing to do for your employees, prescriptions and travel insurance, dental insurance, and all sorts of therapies depending on the plan that you buy into. It really is fantastic. Teladoc, best doctor system. Get her done today. Go to chamberplan.ca. Get a free quote, chamberplan.ca.
Yeah. Todd Shapiro was going to be on the show tomorrow, and he sent me a note. Like, it's funny when I won't read it, but it's the kind of grown-up note. I looked at it. He's got he's got an investor live stream today. Now, remember, Todd's the CEO of Red Light Holland in the Netherlands. And he said, oh, dude, I got an investor live stream as we announce a merger of some kind. Anyway, I can just tell you, it's a grown-up job the kid's doing, and he's no longer a kid. He's the CEO of this publicly traded company on the CSE. The ticker symbol is TRIP. It's part of a three-month partnership. As always, do your due diligence and speak to a financial advisor. Maybe the Sherpa can hook you up with some of this before considering buying stock. We're not giving any advice, but we do have some fun with our friend Todd. And, of course, Red Light Holland is engaged in the production of magic truffles in the Netherlands, and they produce their own brand of iMicrodose packs sold online and available at iMicrodose.nl. Around here, the border, around these parts, the company has created a movement without making medical claims. They want to be part of a positive change and are supporting Red Light Holland as they sell clothing at iMicrodose.ca. So there you go. Todd will be back. I think he's rescheduled already for next Thursday. And I want to get his take on not only the company, but... You know, he's been doing a lot of traveling and, you know, maybe he'll have some thoughts about some of the, you know, the different restrictions around the world. I don't know what they're doing in the Netherlands for vaccination and passports. But as that kid said on the video, you know, you don't have to get vaccinated, but you're going to be restricted. Life's going to be restricted for people without vaccination.
A few years ago, Delisa and I went to the Netherlands, Holland, and while we were there, she became obsessed with things, you know, Dutch, whatever the term is, and she insisted that we buy these big wooden shoes.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously. And at the time, I thought she was kidding, because all tourists go to Holland and buy big wooden shoes.
Yeah.
And I said, "Doll, what do you want with those? I mean, seriously, we got to put them in the suitcase." And then, you know, she got a little annoyed with me because, you know, I sometimes push back on certain purchases. And she said, "Well, I have an idea." She says, "I'm going to turn them into flower pots." I said, "What?" She said, "Yeah, they're nice big shoes. I can put some earth in there and maybe some little impatience and put them out front." Mm. And I said, "Okay, if that's what you want to do." And I think that was 2013. It's 2021. And those wooden shoes are still under my workbench at home.
Yeah.
There's a story for you. Flower pot.
Yeah.
I can push back, but in the end, I'm like, okay, if that's what you want to do, let's stuff these big, heavy wooden shoes in something and take them all the way home. And yeah.
You know, I have a question. What do the wooden shoes think of the AstraZeneca vaccinations? You know what you should do with those? I'm going to tell you right now. I never would have thought I'd hear myself say these following words, but you should take those wooden shoes and put them on Facebook Marketplace and sell that shit.
But you know what's amazing? I actually slipped my foot into one. They are comfortable. It's weird.
Are they really?
Yeah.
You wouldn't think
it's
so.
It's weird.
Because they're made from wood.
Yeah, but just the way they finish them inside and everything. Yeah.
So are wooden shoes the Crocs of Holland? Are they Holland? Okay, sorry.
I guess, yeah.
That's like Holland Crocs. Wooden Crocs.
Yeah.
Crocs.
What's that, Phil?
Her rocks.
Okay.
Let me tell you a little story about brand names. So I have these Crocs that I've been wearing up here at the Tin Palace
Trailer
for some
Crocs.
Time. Finally, the bottom became so smooth, they became treacherous, like on a deck or something, and it was wet. And
they lost all their grip.
Delise always hated them because they were Crocs. Okay?
Yeah.
But I liked them. I found them very convenient to slip in and out of, you know, in and out of the Tin Palace. So for Father's Day, you know what she buys me? She buys me some Birkenstock rubber Birkenstock slip-on sandals. And you know what they look like?
I'm guessing wooden shoes?
No. They look just like the Crocs that she didn't like.
Yeah.
But these say Birkenstock across the top. So
I'm just wondering.
I know Crocs and the image attached to that isn't very cool nowadays. But to me, I don't really see the big difference in appearance, except these say Birkenstock and they're cool and I should wear them. And the Crocs not.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you, they're very comfortable, these Birkenstock rubber sandals.
I bet they are.
Very comfortable.
I never had, first of all, great story. Let's just acknowledge that.
No, I got a million of them.
Oh, I know. And I've heard some of them a million times. I'm the same way. Tell the same shit over and over again. But I never wore anything but just kind of like regular. Well, let me back it up. Depends how much time we have. You remember there was a time, maybe you don't, but I was against men wearing sandals, full stop. Phil, this is before you were born.
Really?
Yeah, I just thought, it's obvious. I've mentioned a few times before that I think women's feet are very pretty, and I appreciate them. I'm not rubbing myself on feet, but I just like a nice foot. And I always thought that men's feet shouldn't be for display because they're all gnarled.
Because they're fugly.
They are. And I resisted sandals, but eventually like a lot of things, I grew up and I started wearing sandals and realized how enjoyable that is in the summer's time. Until I met Rachel, I'd never even considered buying Birkenstocks. But I can tell you, I'm on my second pair of Birkenstock sandals, and I just wear them around the house because they're the most comfortable things on the piggies.
See, I don't want them. You're talking the Birkenstocks with the couple of straps and buckles, right?
Yeah, on the classic and the bottom. It's really about the platform.
No, I know. But I don't want... I've resisted. Delise has tried to buy me. I just personally don't like the look of them on a man. And I'm sorry, that's just me. And I know a lot of guys wear them, like you, and you love them.
I do.
But she said, let me buy you some Birkenstocks, and I resist. And then I see the Birkenstock ones that I was describing today, the rubber ones, are like the traditional, just the big strap over the the front of
it. Oh, no, no. I totally get it. Yeah. I mean, there's... Mm-hmm. And I was the same way. And that's why I say I always just wore, like, the sandals I had. And I had them forever. It was just your classic sort of dude sandals, whatever. And,
right, right.
And they were ratty.
Right, right.
And I wore them at, you know, when the odd time we'd go up north, I'd wear them. And anyway, it didn't matter. Mm-hmm. But I can tell you, when I got my new Birkenstocks this spring, like, I was excited. I'll tell you, it's just the way your feet fit into these things.
Right.
Here's the thing about the Birkenstock people. They've done their research.
No, I know. And me, I'm being very superficial. To me, it's the appearance I don't like. I just don't like the look of them. It's weird. And on women, they look great.
No,
but on men, I don't be offended by what I'm saying.
I'm
because you're not the only guy
unoffended just, by this.
We were up in Bob Cajun a couple of years ago, and there's a big I forget the name of the
the Birkenstock store, Festival.
Nah, there's a big Bigley's or something. They sell shoes, a huge place. And she almost had me talked into the Birkenstock and stocks, and then I turned around, and I saw these Keen sandals, almost like rope.
Oh, yeah.
And I opted for them instead.
I'm with you, by the way. And I resisted right up to... This was two summers ago now, Rachel and I. And she took me sandal shopping because the ones I had were ridiculous and falling apart. Mm-hmm. Hang on, Jordan. We'll be right there. And when we go to the store, and I was looking at every other sandal, and I really didn't like them that much. And then she goes, here, try these. And when they came onto the feet, it was like... It was revolutionary.
No, I get it. You know, it's each to their own.
All right.
That's my whole world, each to their own.
No, I know. You're very... Uh-huh. You just let... You know what you are? Let people be. Exactly.
That's right.
You live and let live.
No.
And just... Mm-hmm. Okay. Well... I wonder if drive... I'm going to guess. I'll tell you what. Why don't we play a little game today? Because we've got Jordan coming up in a second... And then Dan Drew, and then Michael Boone. And let's see where everyone is. We'll call it Birkenstock or not. Okay? That's a little game we're going to play, starting with our first guest, a James Beard nominated chef. I guarantee you, James Beard has got like 9 pairs of Birkenstocks. Seriously. If he's even alive. Is he alive? I don't know. Jordan's like, what? This is your introduction? This sucks. He is a James Beard nominated chef and host of In the Weeds and a regular contributor to this program. Please say hi to Jordan Wegman. Hi, buddy.
Hello.
Oh, wait. Hold on, Jordan. Thank you, Fred. Jordan Wegman, Phil is our Gig Sky guest of the day. Hang on a minute. Hold on. Gig Sky, guest of the day.
That's right. Our guest today is brought to you by GigSky, the only worldwide mobile data provider with affordable rates in over 190 countries. Download the app today for Android or iOS.
All right. Jordan Wegman, Birkenstocks or not?
100% Birkenstocks all the way.
All day, all day.
And all day. And so... All day, but, and there's a but here. You know, I'm not so sure that Birkenstocks should be worn with socks.
Never.
No.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so,
man.
Like, Birkenstocks all day long, but no socks.
You see a lot of old English chaps wearing socks with their Birkenstocks.
Yeah.
jaunty fellows.
Yeah. You know, once in a while, like, I've had to go out with Stan. And I'm wearing socks, and I'll just throw my Birkenstocks on and go out in the back. And I feel weird, and I'm hoping nobody sees me, because that's all I need. That's all I need.
That's right.
Hey, look, there's Howard. He's wearing socks and Birkenstocks.
That picture would go viral. Could you imagine?
Not really.
No, nobody sees you. Like, who, the people coming in and out of the Rub and Tug? Those people?
Yes.
Yeah.
No, Fred, the Rub and Tug patrons. I don't need their shame. You imagine? I do that sometimes. Sometimes I see... Go ahead, Jordan.
No, I was just going to say Birkenstocks are like the shoes of the kitchen. Like, they are the shoes of the kitchen. I mean, every chef is wearing a shoe like the Birkenstock or Nayot. Nayots are great from Israel.
But Jordan, Freddie and I were just talking about it. Like, I would never consider myself a Birkenstock guy. until I got my first pair a couple of years ago. Lady friend Rachel convinced me, and now I'm like, fine, I'll wear them. I don't care what you think they look like. They're so comfortable.
100%. You know, I think you get to a point in your, you know, in your life where you begin to turn gray and you don't care what people think.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you should see what I'm wearing right now, my little outfit and with my flip flops, no less.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't care anymore.
Listen, I like you a lot, so I'm going to say this respectfully. When I'm downtown where I live, you know, in the East End where Rachel lives and here in the West End, when I see people walking around, men people, usually younger men, wearing flip-flops on cement, I'm like, no. No, sir.
What do you mean? What do you call a flip-flop? The thing that goes between your toes sure. and the really thin ones?
Yeah.
Or would that include what I described as the Birkenstocks I have, the rubber sort of thing?
No. What Jordan's wearing there, though, I think those are flip-flops. Like, you know, the kind of thing you wear around the cottage. But I see a lot of the younger guys, Jordan, downtown wearing those. I just don't think they're comfortable for walking.
Well, not for long distances, certainly. Right. For going to the grocery store, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. All right.
And, you know, I mean, I just walk the dog. So that was really the extent of it.
The problem is when I wear sandals into a grocery store, they call me over and say, please, sir, can you cover those up? You're around food.
Yeah, exactly. They do. They say, we've got a guy with monkey feet near the Pradas. Can we get monkey feet, boy? Hey, Jordan, I have a bit of a conundrum, and it's just, I don't know what it is. Maybe it's insecurity. But the last, I don't know, 5 or 6 times I've cooked dinner for my love, whatever the protein has been, whether it's burgers, chicken, fish, or steak. And I think I also had an episode with a tender pork loin or a pork tenderloin. I have been, and it's just a bit of nervousness now. I am consistently undercooking the protein because I'm worried about overcooking it. And on several occasions recently, I've taken it off, thought it was fine. Yes, I have a thermometer, and it's just been underdone. So I'm cooking some steaks this weekend. True story, Rachel said, I'm going to give you another shot. We're going to get some nice steaks. Just for everyone like me, what is it about, you know, not, I guess it's in some cases people overdo it, but what's your sort of pro tip?
Yeah, so here's what I would say to you. Better to undercook than overcook. You can always put it back into the oven. And that is what I subscribe to, because that's a learning experience, right? Like, and what you need to do is, and I have a rule of thumb, which I can teach you in the audience, but you know, what's really critical is to get to know the feel of your food and what that raw protein feels like versus what it should feel like in the oven. So I have the rule of thumb, I call it. And if you simply take, and it's very simple, if you take your index finger to your thumb, don't press, just touch. And now right at the bottom, the base of your thumb,
right,
press that piece of flesh. That's a raw piece of meat. Okay. So it's very forgiving. There's not much pushback. And now if you go to the next finger, okay, that's a medium rare steak right there.
Oh, okay.
And then if you go to the next finger, and again, you're only touching, you're not pressing. You're
Phil,
just touching.
Stop touch. That's your finger, Phil, not your wiener.
Gentlemen, come on.
Come on,
this
Phil.
This is a family show.
No, it's not.
And that's a perfectly cooked chicken breast. So what I do is
So thumb to ring fingers is perfectly cooked chicken breast.
You got it.
And does the same rule,
the base,
does it apply to a steak as well?
That is absolutely. And so the reference is that if the middle finger is a medium rare steak,
yes,
and the next one is a perfectly cooked chicken breast, that next one in terms of a steak would probably be almost medium well.
Okay. And by the way, you're right. I have done that a few times. I've taken it off. I had the thermometer. I didn't trust it. And then I put it back on. And I'm trying to resist cutting into it because I think that's, you know, immature.
Well, the premature cutters, right? You don't want to be a premature cutter.
Absolutely.
Ever.
Yeah, I was.
It looks bad on you.
That's the next question I was going to ask. So you're dead against the cutting into it to have a look.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm actually against piercing a thermometer in there because it's really doing the same thing, right? Yeah. You're releasing a lot of those juices. So there's something called carryover cooking, which is really critical to appreciate. So when you take your meat and this is really all of your proteins. When you take that protein off of the heat source, whatever that is, you need to allow that to rest for 30 to 50% of its cooking time. So very quickly, the analogy is this. It's June. We're going to go up to Muskoka. We're going to jump in the water. I hate cold water. You jump in, what happens? Everything shrivels up.
Shrinkage, yeah.
You've got, no right, big yeah. time. You've got your blood rushing to the inside to protect all your organs. That's what happens when you subject a piece of a steak to a saute pan or a barbecue. All the juice starts to run to the inside. In order for us to relax and now warm up from that cold water, we get out, we go put on our chalkies. Remember the chalkies store on Spadina?
No, I'm not from
Silverstein
here.
And
I'm from Moose Jaw.
So you put on your onesie, you
okay.
go sit by the fire, and then all your blood starts to disperse. Same premise applies. When you take your meat off of the heat source, it needs time for the juices to disperse and for the protein to relax.
So let me just jump in. So you're saying when you tent a steak or any protein, you're basically putting it into a protein onesie.
So, okay. So I would say I never tent.
Oh, you're a non-tenter.
Never, and I'll tell you why.
So you just leave it out in the open?
I do. I let my freak flag fly.
Wow.
And so, yeah, but here's why. Because when you tent something, what are you doing? You're retaining that heat.
It's still, yeah.
It continues to cook. Okay. You're bringing it from one oven into another, quote-unquote, air quote, oven. Right. So you need that time to relax. And what I always tell people is inevitably the question always comes up. OK, chef, if the internal temperature because of carryover cooking remains exactly where we want it to be, I don't like to serve my food cold.
Yes.
So I would suggest that you do what every other professional restaurant does. We let our proteins rest and then they flash it under what we call a salamander or what the home cook calls a broiler in the oven. And you flash it under the broiler after it's rested for 30 to 50% of its cooking time. And you bring that external temperature up for 4 seconds, 5 seconds, whatever it looks
That's
like.
That's it under a broiler, 4 or 5
That's
seconds?
It.
Wow.
Because the internal temperature remains exactly where you want it
okay,
to
just,
be.
Okay, just, Freddie, let me just jump in quickly. That's a great point because I've been tenting meat and I was given that choice, but I never understood why, what you did when it goes cold. Freddie, go ahead.
Yeah, and that's another reason, obviously, that you let meat get to room temperature before you cook it as well, right? Because if it's cold when you throw it on the barbecue, that same right. thing happens. It sort of shrivels.
Yeah, you want all of that. Yeah, absolutely. You want all of your proteins to be as close to room temperature as possible. Is it, you know, we are all busy people. Inevitably, we will come home and we'll forget to have pulled something from the freezer and we'll start to cook it a little bit frozen. It happens. You know, it happens. There are shortcuts. But yes, ideally, as close to room temperature as possible.
Jordan, let me ask you this. And if Delise is listening, don't worry. You didn't get it. I was downstairs. I got a freezer downstairs. And I was doing some stuff, putting in and out, organizing it. And I took a steak out and I put it on the workbench. And then when I was finished, I forgot to put it back in. So I go down the next day, 24, 26 hours later, and there is the steak on the workbench. It had been out for that long. I still cooked it, and I still ate it. There's nothing wrong with that, is there?
Yeah, there is.
Yeah, there you go.
So
you weren't expecting that, were you?
I thought that was aging.
Yeah, no, aging, so sure.
Aging
bacteria.
Is a controlled environment.
Okay.
And so this is actually thawing things. And ultimately creating, you're putting food stuff into what we call the temperature danger zone.
Yeah, hang on a second, Jordan.
40 degrees and 1.
He didn't want to throw it out because he didn't want to waste it.
Well, absolutely.
And he was like, oh, we're just dry aging it for 48 hours.
But you know what I would say to you? In the laundry room, I have another refrigerator. Mm-hmm. And that's where one of my freezers is as well. So okay. I sometimes will pull something and I'll forget about it. But but my laundry room is freezing cold.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
You know?
Yeah, yeah. It's like leaving groceries in your car in the wintertime. But I have a question for Fred.
Freddie,
I have a question. I thought you said you took the steak out.
Sick.
you said you took it out and put it on your workbench. I thought you were in the bedroom because I thought that's what you call the bed, the workbench.
Yes. Yeah, that's the other workbench.
Jordan, it's interesting that I want to get back to this resting thing because Rachel, my girlfriend, is a very, very good cook. And yet, she was not really, I was surprised, sort of unaware of two things that we talked about. Bringing protein to room temperature before you cook it. But mostly resting it. I'm going to stop tenting the meat because you've answered a big question for me and a lot of home cooks, which is, yes, you're supposed to rest it. So what Jordan said, if you cook a steak for 12 minutes, you should rest it for between 4 and 6 minutes. The drag of it is in that time, and it's happened to me recently, a nice piece of meat, and it's cold. So you go in, you put it on high broil, and then you warm it up for 5, 6, 7 seconds, and there's your hot steak.
That's right.
Fantastic.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Jordan's podcast is called In the Weeds, another Toronto Mike production. How? What are we going to hear in the weeds week to week?
You know, today we're dropping Chef Adrian Nyman. And Adrian is one of the most well-known restaurateurs in Toronto. And we had Anthony Rose on a couple weeks ago. And really what I've done is I've curated, it's been fun, a lot of roundtables. So I've assembled, you know, professionals and experts from certain areas in the hospitality world, whether it be content creators on social media, or it's chefs in the US. So really trying to curate that roundtable or panel experience for the listener. But I continue to learn, and I continue to promote and amplify the message of those that I really love and respect and, you know, and care about. So it's just been a lot of fun for me.
Good for you. Yeah. Fantastic.
Yeah, thank you.
Can I ask a question about some ribs now?
Sure.
Before you do, Fred, can I get Jordan, you're I know you sound great, by the way. The audio is fantastic, but a lot of times when people have the iPod microphone, every time you move there's kind of a clicky sound. So could you just hold it? Yeah, just hold it straight so that there's not a lot. Yeah, perfect. We're with Jordan Wagman, and his show is called In the Weeds, and Fred about to ask a rib question. Let's join that conversation now.
Jordan, I'm still trying to find my way with ribs. I mean, my family sort of likes them the way I've done them, but I'm trying to change it a bit because a guy I know here at the Tin Palace does a fabulous rib. You know, cooking ribs on the barbecue from the beginning, I mean, can be a long ordeal. So what I tend to do is cheat a bit, if in fact, I don't even know if it's cheating, but maybe in the oven at 200, 225 degrees for 3 or 4 hours, and then introduce them to the barbecue. You know, this whole idea, too, of the fall-off-the-bone ribs, I've grown to not really like that. I want to chew my rib a bit off the bone.
I don't want it falling off the bone. Then why have bones?
And that's the thing. I used to do them maybe 6 to 8 hours at 200 degrees, and then but they fell off the bone. And I'm thinking, you know, that's a term that people use, but I'm not sure I want that. Anyway, on the weekend, I did about 3 hours at 225 degrees and then introduced them to the barbecue.
Hey, before you put them on the barbecue, is that when you put the sauce on, or do you put the sauce on in the oven?
Oh, no, never. No, I only put the sauce. I season them in the oven. Okay. And then I put on the sauce while they're cooking and let it caramelize because you don't want it to burn, of course. Anyway, the end result was pretty good. You know, they were tender, but you had to actually bite them off the rib. My question being, is that the way you would do them, or would you always do them from the beginning on the barbecue?
It's time. It's situational. It really just depends. But I'm going to give you a little bit of a tip that I learned from both Mark McEwen and Brad Long in Toronto when we opened up the Air Canada Center. And that was in 99. We opened up the ACC. And Brad and Mark had the greatest ribs, and these were just, you know, pork back ribs. Okay. But what we used to do was we used to take the marinade that we would ultimately be glazing the ribs with. We'd dilute it with some water. Mm-hmm. We'd cover it in a pan, and then we'd put it in the oven to introduce a lot of moisture into those ribs. Mm-hmm. And you're infusing a lot of that marination, a lot of that marinade flavor into the ribs. Mm-hmm. And you're breaking them down a little bit and expediting that cooking process.
So you're kind of braising them first.
A little bit, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And then I'm putting it on the grill, and I'm kissing it with that, you know, ultimately with whatever marinade or barbecue sauce that you want. That's what I'm doing.
How long are we talking in that solution?
You know, again, it could be, it depends on the size. So what I would say is that, just like you, I don't like my ribs to fall off the bone. I want chew.
Yeah,
so I'm just
chewy.
Introducing moisture. 45 minutes to an hour is plenty. Cool them down. You can even do that. Then that's what I love so much about this approach is you can do that the day before.
Okay.
Right. And then you can cool it down. And then all you're doing is you're throwing it onto the barbecue to finish cooking for another half hour, 45 minutes, whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's very similar to my rib recipe that I had been, you know, doing over the years was the Coca-Cola, like boiling versus braising. But boiling, what I don't like about boiling the ribs first is it does what you said, Freddie. They become too sort of, you know, too...
Fall apart.
Mm-hmm. But this braising thing is kind of the best of that because you infuse it with some flavor and moisture. But I also, what you just said too, is important to cool them down.
And become easier to work with, right? And it's a great hack for caterers, right? So you know, a lot of caterers, if you think about large scale execution, we would probably be braising that the day before,
right,
cooling it down, and then a la minute, we would, you know, throw it on the barbecue and finish them.
You know, and at any level, and I know this is big with you, Howard, presentation counts on some level, even to your family. You know, when you have a nice rack of ribs that look good and they're ready to go, you want them to be in one piece. You don't want to be like putting them on the serving plate in all hunks because they're falling apart as well.
Hey, Jordan, speaking of restaurants, just quickly, if you don't mind, you're talking to a lot of restaurateurs. What's the feeling in the city, restaurateur wise, in terms of things opening up and, you know, where are we headed, and will businesses be saved? I know a lot of your friends have been, you know, having a tough time of it.
Yeah, I mean, I can answer it a couple ways. Number one, everyone is having a hard time. Mental health is something I talk about often. I lost a friend a couple weeks ago to mental illness, and I struggle with mental health. I have my entire life. So that's a topic I purposely bring up with all of my friends and all of my guests. And it's been a really hard 15, 14, whatever many months for these people. Some of them have lost incredible talent in their kitchen, and we have lost incredible talent across the continent in the industry because everyone has realized some quality of life. Others, you know, are just looking for other things to do in their life and realize that they just don't have to work 17-hour days at $13 an hour anymore. I asked Adrian if he could breathe easier, and he said, not yet, but it's coming. What we need are to get back to the events. Right now, you're seeing restaurateurs able to open up the doors and pay their employees and serve some of their clients. They're not able to serve enough clients. And, you know, we're not there yet, but we're getting there. And I think, and I hope, based on what I see with all of my friends in the States, that we're likely 6 months behind, you know, the large metropolises that have opened up. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah, we can't figure out why, but that's the way it is here.
Yeah. Yeah. Listen, I feel for all of my friends.
Yeah.
And I'm doing my first event tomorrow night for a group of seven in a backyard. I haven't cooked for people in a year, and I miss it tremendously. And I'm really looking forward to being able to do that part of my life again.
So what would the protocol be for that with you tomorrow night? Would you insist that people be vaccinated before you do something like that, or just because it's outside and you'll keep your distance? And
only because it's outside. I'll answer that a different way. I'm my home has been my restaurant. When I'm going to host guests, I'm no longer hosting them in my home. I've built a little area on site to host my guests. And I'm really not sure how I'm executing it yet. I'm not sure what those protocols will be. I know that I'm double vaxxed, and I know that that's what I was mostly concerned
about, of course,
me and my family being vaccinated. So I think that if we can continue being safe, I don't think there's going to be communal dining at my table yet. I don't think I'm going to have, you know, six strangers sitting at a picnic table.
Right.
So I'm not sure yet how we're going to curate it.
I apologize. I think I cut Fred off when he was talking about presentation and such. I've always wondered, and I asked McHugh, we've had a few conversations with some chefs over the years. Mark McHugh has done our show, and at the time it was fascinating asking him about catering to larger scales. Like, you're doing an event tomorrow night for seven people, which would freak me out. Seven people trying to get all the coordination and the timing down. What is it like when it's 70 people? And I've asked McHugh, and what's it like when it's 700 people? And I find that part of the business almost like science, the way you work out the timing and the cooking. So give us some perspective on that.
Yeah, that's all organization, and it takes and it's experience, and it's understanding what, you know, what needs to be done first. But it's not unlike just cooking for the seven people. You need to have an appreciation for timing. So if I'm cooking a steak, and steak is a perfect analogy because we spoke to it earlier, if I'm cooking a steak, I need to know when I need to cook it, because it needs to rest and it's going to be served down here. Mm-hmm. You know, the ribs, for example, if you're going to cook ribs to 700 people, are we going to just cook those, you know, that day, or are we going to cook them and braise them 2 or 3 days before, make sure they're well rested, and then we're just throwing them on the grill? So it's really just about timing and organization. It's, you know, you're not going to start preparing your greens 5 days in advance. That would be the last thing that you do. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right? Because they're so delicate.
All right. Well, listen, we're gonna have to work this microphone thing out, because I'm still getting a lot of clicky click sound, but that's fine. We've come to the end of our segment. I want everyone to know that Jordan Wagman is an official friend of this program. He does a show called In the Weeds, available wherever you get your podcasts. And it's fascinating to hear you talk about food. You do it in such a nice way, and you seem like a very lovely person. So thank you.
Well, I'm a little bit of an ass, apparently, because I need new headphones.
No, so it's not you. It's not you. So don't take it. Here's the thing. By the way, you should know this is not a family show. Whoever told you that was completely wrong. All the best to you, and I hope we get a chance to have some food with you sometime. That would be cool.
I look forward to that in the very near future, and say hello to my friend, Mr. Boone.
I will. He'll be on here in about 30 minutes. I'll check it out. Thanks, my friend.
All right. Have a great day.
Jordan, you too,
brother. Good to talk to you, bud.
Jordan Wagman. We think about how much stuff we just learned there. We learned a ton. This thing, you know, I'd always heard about the that method of, but I didn't realize it with the fingers. That's new.
No, I've heard that too, but I still don't trust it.
I know.
Like, you know what I mean? I press that, and then I press the meat, and I think, okay, like, I think so.
Yeah, but I'm going to tell him, Rachel, what he told me. Better to have the protein undercooked.
Yes.
Because, you know, I don't want to, I guess, you know. I've done it recently. I know it's going to sound stupid. I did burgers last weekend, and again, she was like, don't forget, you always undercook it. I'm like, I know. What are you going
to
do?
You had to remind me.
Should have heard the conversation we had last night about, you know, me trying to cook steaks for her this weekend. Now it's like a big thing. Well, Mr. Underdone.
If Jordan had stuck around, I was going to ask him about that. The price of beef is just crazy right now.
Is it?
So my question to him would be, and I love this on Home and Garden. Everybody that's, you know, when you see those shows about buying a new house, everybody's interested in entertaining.
Yeah.
Yes, entertaining. It drives me crazy.
Yeah.
Like, everybody's worried about entertaining and what their friends are going to think when they entertain. But anyway, I would have asked Jordan, if I'm entertaining and I'm not serving beef, what would he present to people? You know, you don't want to give them wieners. You don't want to give them sausage. But what would be that meat that, you know, that...
He'd probably do something like lamb shanks, though. He seems like a braised lamb shanks type of dude.
But that isn't cheap either. But I was... Have you seen the price of beef lately?
No, but I'll tell you what's...
And COVID-related, of course.
I'll tell you what's inexpensive. This, the world of Gig Sky. The day has finally come. That's our Gig Sky guest of the day. Thank you, Phil.
The day has finally come. Are you about to leave for the weekend, Phil? Soon?
Almost, yep.
Okay, well, we love you. Have a great weekend. Swing thoughts tomorrow. I'll send you that stuff. Canada has announced it will open its borders for travel very soon, which means you need to start preparing for that long-awaited trip, whether you're off to the tropics, heading to Europe, or just plan to make your way down south. You'll need a mobile data provider to keep you connected while you're there. Download the GigSky app for Android or iOS and get affordable data coverage in over 190 countries using your phone's eSIM. It's the easiest, most affordable, and convenient way to stay connected internationally. Whether you're pulling up directions, looking for the coolest restaurant or bars, or sharing your post-COVID pics on Instagram, you'll want to access data when you travel. It's funny because Freddie and I had a conversation last evening about some travel, and we were having GigSky was part of the conversation because we know with GigSky, should we need it, the opportunity is there. All GigSky data plans are prepaid, no contracts or recurring fees. You get what you pay for, and your service is never throttled. Download the app today from GigSky and enter the code HF2021 for $5 off your first plan, or visit GigSky.com for more information.
You know, Tim Niblett is a portfolio manager. Raymond James, a member of the Canadian Investors Protection Fund. Yesterday, Timmy was on the show. He talked about retirement and that big question, and it all depends who you are, what you want to do, how much money do I need to retire on? And there was some fabulous information there, all the aspects, all the things that you have to think about, and, you know, establishing exactly the lifestyle you want to live post-retirement. So again, if you get the opportunity, you missed it yesterday, go back and listen to it, because it's something, it doesn't matter how old you are, it's food for thought, because it's never, never too soon to start planning for your golden years.
Yes.
And the Sherpa can help you get there faster and efficiently, and with his guidance, you're doing all right. He's the Retirement Sherpa. Tim can be contacted at retirementsherpa.ca.
I played you that little audio of the kid breaking down the anti-vax movement. I found some other audio on my TikTok. This is very interesting. Again, it's about around 55 seconds. And, you know, I won't show you the video. It doesn't matter. But there's a lot of guys like this, sort of older guys that just, their whole thing is just sitting there looking into a camera and just sort of giving us their opinion about things. It's almost like a little mini podcast, and there's lots of guys like this. But this is basically a man in the States talking about, you know, replying to a comment. And the comment he's replying to is, Democrats run the most violent, rundown, crime-ridden cities in the country. Republican cities and states are flourishing, somebody says to this guy. And here's his response.
Did you just say Republican cities and states were flourishing? Oh, no, no, no. Hold on. 8 of the 10 worst states for education? Republican states. 7 of the top 10 poorest states? Republican states. 8 of the top 10 most federally dependent states? Republican states. 9 of the top 10 states for teen pregnancy? Republican states. All 10 of the top 10 states for the lowest life expectancy? Red states. With the exception of Arizona and Nevada, the remaining top 10 states for divorces, all red states. 9 of the top 10 states with the most gun deaths, Republican states. 7 of the top 10 states for violent crime overall, Republican states. 7 of the top 10 states for suicide rates, Republican states. 8 of the top 10 states for bankruptcy, Republican states. You're going to get called on that bullshit here every time.
So isn't that interesting? Because the, you know, the conventional wisdom is that the red states are where the real America is. And we don't want any big government. Meanwhile, they're the most dependent on welfare. They're the most dependent on government intervention. It really just, you know, there's a phrase that will long live, outlive us. And that's the big lie of 2020 being the election. But the real big lie of America is that. That's the big lie of America, that the blue states are somehow, you know, run down and, you know, violent. Anyway, just some food for thought, Frederick.
Well, I know. And if I may just push back a little, I mean, that's got that guy saying that. And you could probably get somebody from the Republican side, not a whack job, to come up with a great list of all the reasons that a Democrat state is no good. I mean, but we know that. Here's the sad part to me. When's the last time you heard somebody in Canada refer to a province politically?
Yeah, exactly.
That is the sad point.
No, good point.
This is our country. It's 50 states, the United States of America. And this is, it's degenerated to this.
Yeah.
You're playing those games. To me, the answer is, I don't care if it's red or blue. Let's collectively get together and fix these problems. It's almost like they enjoy that the other side is suffering.
Yeah.
It's bizarre.
And while it's not new, though, I mean, they've been talking about red and blue for a long time, but I like what you just said, because I believe here in Canada, one of the reasons that we have the lifestyle we have, we have problems, is that we do tend to think of ourselves, Quebec aside, which we all know, where they're spoiled brats. But as a Canadian that's lived in five of these provinces, I can tell you there's a real feeling that what happens federally is good for us all. Whereas there, what happens federally is government intervention and bullshit and Second Amendment. Fuck you. You know, that's one thing you brought up. I wanted to ask you, isn't it incredible they don't have a national strategy for elections, that it's all up to individual states? No wonder they're bonkers.
I know. And that's the disturbing part of it. It's that whole team game thing. You know, I was thinking about this yesterday when I was driving up and I was listening to some political radio. It used to be, and you know, this coincides with social media. It just does. It used to be the election was the game. If you lost, right, you sort of dusted yourself off and you said, okay, I'm a Republican. The Democrats won. I wanted to win. I didn't. But now my focus is on the country and thriving. That's all been lost. And you can really see it now. And especially with conservative radio, which is despicable in the United States. It's like, we lost. Now, what can we do to bring that guy down?
Yeah.
And when we're trying to bring him down, it's hurting the country. Now, I know there's people out there thinking now, well, that's what they did to Donald Trump. But the proof was in the pudding. He was a whack job. That was one situation where, you know, the guy running the country, the rules are a bit different here because this just isn't good.
Yeah, he was on.
It wasn't good for anyone.
Like, if you take Donald Trump out of the, you know, list of U.S. presidents, certainly in our lifetime and certainly in the last 30 years since the Clinton elections, you know, it was kind of like, yes, Clinton had his, that was the rise of right wing radio and television. And Bill Clinton was a despicable guy in a lot of ways, but it was sort of right left. But there was a sense that he's president for our country. Same with George Bush. You know, there was a guy up till Trump you'd think was a numbskull, but it's still, he was the president of the country. Where now it doesn't seem like they care about that. And I think it's what you just hit on. And I've said this and I agree with it, that there's a feeling in this country that we really are all in this together. And look at what's happened with this, the reveal of the residential schools. It's a national embarrassment. It's not an embarrassment for Kamloops. Whereas they don't have that sense. The reason we have universal health care is because we care about one another fundamentally on a universal basis. They don't have that there.
No, I mean, it's so many things out of the states. Like, where Rush Limbaugh was from Missouri or something. I forget what state. But the governor of that state, again, a red state, like they've made some proclamation or there's going to be a Rush Limbaugh day or something. And I'm thinking, my God, are you kidding me? You people are so twisted that you're going to celebrate. That would be like celebrating like old George Wallace or some other
bigoted racist.
Holy cow, here we are in Canada ripping down statues, you know, of Ryerson or whoever, or even John A. McDonald, and it's like they're going in the reverse. They're taking people like Rush Limbaugh, who's a proven prick, and celebrating him, like lifting him up. It's sad. It really is.
It's sad and it's fascinating, because back to what we're talking about, the you know, the individual being, you know, valued above the community in the states. they're so twisted. And again, I love that word. It's so twisted and backwards there that when you hear those interviews with people in the red states about, you know, gun control and First Amendment and such, when you hear them talk about and how they push back against, you know, don't take our guns away, don't take our rights, the fact that, just mute yourself there for a second, Dan, the fact that after a school shooting, they don't think guns are a problem.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost weird. It's like they don't think they want big government, but meanwhile they have bad sewage and their roads are shitty.
Mm-hmm. I know. And yeah, and you know, you said off the top, we have our problems. Yes, we have our problems, and maybe our problems one day will be as bad. Who knows? Because, you know, we're becoming a little more polarized here. I mean, not to the extent they are, but I mean,
I don't think it's baked into our culture the way it is there, though.
Yeah, well, hope so. I hope you're right, because it's not the way to be. It's not the way to go.
Well, again, it's the thing, you know, going back to what Brother David was saying a few weeks ago, you know, it starts with the individual and then you have to care about your family and the family mm-hmm. becomes the community, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And that's why, mm-hmm. you know, like they just push back. And you've said this a bunch of times about it doesn't matter what's right or wrong. It's what's your team up to. And if you're the Reds team, then you hate everything yeah. about the Blue team. And you know, like this visit to the, you know, the G7 and then the conversation with Russia. You were saying that Hannity, you know, how they've turned on Putin because they said nothing about Putin for 4 years when Piss Boy was in charge. Yes, I called the president Piss Boy.
You know, Rush was the same way. Rush Limbaugh was the same way as Sean Hannity because there was something weird going on there with Trump and Putin, which I think I'm hopeful will one day be exposed.
Yeah.
Yeah. They didn't want to go and they didn't want to really go, you know, they didn't want to deal with the Putin stuff. But now Putin's evil. He's a bastard. He, you know, he's controlling Biden. And then yesterday at one point I heard Hannity say he was embarrassed by something that Joe Biden said at the press conference after meeting with Putin. And I'm thinking, well, that doesn't seem that bad to me. But Sean, let me ask you, were you embarrassed when Donald Trump stood up and said he believed Putin over your own intelligence department? Remember that day? Mm. But see, he wouldn't even deal with that. He would pretend that didn't even happen.
From now until sundown, if we wanted to, we could sit here and say, Sean, you mean you weren't embarrassed when the president of these United States said we should lick bleach and put light bulbs in our asshole? Mm-hmm. The Washington Post had an article a couple of days ago, and they had fact checked, and the final tally for the Donald Trump presidency was 31,000 lies, misleading statements, etc. I love that game. You mean, Sean Hannity, you were not embarrassed when, you know, this guy said a million of the things he said?
Mm-hmm.
And petulant fucking child that he was.
But, you know, they'll always find a way to justify it. And it's interesting with that, you know, traditionally in Canadian talk radio, you'll often take a dissenting call. Never, ever, ever, ever do they take a call, somebody challenging them.
I know.
Because they can't deal with it.
Although
all their guests, it's all, yes, Sean, whatever you say. Oh, Sean. Oh, yes, you're right, Sean. Fuck off.
To be fair, though, I listened to Michael Skrimoshi, whatever, scrimmage on, what's it called? He's on Patriot. POTUS.
Mm-hmm.
They don't take a lot of dissenting calls either.
Mm-hmm.
But okay. You're right. You never hear Hannity go, no, I don't like, I'm sorry you disagree with me. It's never mm-hmm. that. There's it's the same never. Reason that Chris Sky, mm-hmm. anti-vax twat hole, it's the same reason he wouldn't let us ask him a reasonable question. He didn't want to have to answer it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like if Tucker Carlson or Sean Hannity or that witch who does the evening thing, if they ever took a call or a dissenting mm-hmm. opinion, they won't even book guests that have a dissenting opinion.
Oh, no.
And the odd time when one does rise up, they just shut them down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know.
Yep. That's the way it is. But, and that's why, you know, it's, driving up here yesterday, I'm just poking around, and I put it on, and I had it on for about 20 to 25 minutes, and then it hit me again. Subconsciously, I just thought to myself, why do I feel bad right now? I feel bad because I'm listening to this.
Yeah.
So I shut it off. And over the past few months, you know, since that the election, it's funny when you really think about it, you know, moment to moment, that stuff can make you feel bad without really realizing why you feel bad.
Yeah, it's
because
like
you're getting this information that's disturbing and you know is wrong and you know it's a lie and you know it's unproductive, it's evil. So,
well, two things. Yes, it's like a low grade.
Yeah.
Tension. And I think the second thing is it comes from what I've said a few times, which is there's never any resolution that is what you want. You don't get the resolve of, you know, Sean finally, you know, because you always want them to go, you know what? I'm full of shit. and that never happens. So it's always non-resolved aggravation. You know, every time you think, oh, well, this has got to, Matt Gaetz has got to be, that's got to be the thing that brings them down, but it never is.
No,
they're launching a huge investigation in the state of New York against Donald Trump. They hired a couple of hotshot lawyers that have been that are experienced in prosecuting. Wait for it, the mob. And I heard that news, getting all excited about it, and then part of me was like, yeah, but they will find a way to hang this up for years, and it will never get resolved the way you want it to be, mm-hmm. which is him in handcuffs. And that fucking hair flying up in the air.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
One other thing, and we'll move on from this.
Yes, we've got to get to Dan Duran, who sold his speakers.
Another thing, and I wish I had asked Noel the other day, Kasler. The big thing on conservative talk radio right now is critical race theory. I don't fully understand it, but it's become the thing. Critical race theory being taught in the schools.
Yes.
And I can't even sit here and explain it right now. I've read it a few times and I'm trying to think, wow. But again, this is grasping at straws because things have settled down so much in the United States. It's so back to normal. They're grabbing at things now for ratings and to get attention and to get the right side riled up over race again. Very interesting.
Yeah.
Wacky little country. But I would love at some point to have somebody come on and explain that whole critical race theory.
It says, in an academic movement of civil rights scholars and activists in the U.S. who seek to critically examine the laws that intersects with the issues of race and to challenge mainstream liberal approaches to racial justice. I've heard it. I still don't get it. But I can tell you it's making some people nervous because it's like they want to. It's almost like they don't want to offend white children by telling them that their forefathers were fucking slave owners and pricks, basically. That's kind of it in a nutshell, isn't it?
Yeah, and the argument against that is, you know, that was your great-grandfather and his father. What's it got to do with us now? And there's something to that. I mean, you got to balance it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's their cesspool right now.
But, it's a huge cesspool.
they seem to be hanging their hat on that right now, even though, again, I can't fully understand it.
Well, I'll tell you, someone who can, mm-hmm. a real live newsman. We don't
which is not me.
We don't have one of those, but we do have
Dan Duran, the Anchorman, comes and asks for credentials. He has none. Can't tell a headline from his bum, but his voice is nice and low. Dan Duran, the Anchorman's here. He's prone to falling off his chair, but he's got a big wang, so he don't care, and his voice is nice and low.
My voice is nice and low.
And now, from a trailer approximately 45 feet from where Fred is sitting, I can't wait for the first Dan. What is that music you're playing?
I can't wait either. I'm going to select something and turn it up very loud.
Yeah, turn that down, Dan. This world music. Now with the anchor, with the news, here's Anchorman Dan Duran.
Guys, today is Global Garbage Man Day, so to celebrate, throw stuff out.
Mm.
Hey, and by the way, did you know that on this day in 1994, this is the day that O.J. Simpson took a little highway tour in his white Ford Bronco with police escort?
Today?
Today is that day.
That's crazy.
Because 1994.
Because Lou Glassman and myself, on June 17th, 1994, were staying in a bed and breakfast in Scotland, and they had a common area. So you come down, everyone has their own room, and you come to the common area, and we came downstairs, and it was a bunch of people watching the Bronco go down the highway.
Isn't it wild that that turned into one of those moments in history that you always remember?
Well, for sure. I just remember because, you know, Dad and I were on that vacation in Scotland, and everything stopped that day to watch the highway chase of O.J. Simpson.
To me, the most significant point of that Bronco chase, or whatever you want to call it, was him screaming, "I'm guilty." And to think that ultimately he got off.
No, I know. But isn't that America?
Yeah.
Isn't that America? The guy was running, freaking out. The place is covered in blood, and yet he got off. That's America.
And the Bronco, there was a disguise and money. Lots of money, too, right? Yeah.
Found not guilty. Found not guilty. Yeah. Hang on a second, Dan Duran.
All right, okay.
And now more news and views. Anchorman, Dan Duran.
Over at the Real News Network, CBC found in an investigation some registered massage therapists are offering sex for sale. Now, there's a registered massage therapist, and not only that, they're offering insurance receipts. Now, they did this research in Montreal, Saskatoon, Winnipeg, and Calgary, and those provinces apparently don't have any, like, they're unregulated, meaning they don't have no central college maintaining enforcing ethics and standards.
You mean they didn't go to jerk-off school?
Yeah. So, none of this is really surprising to me, except the insurance receipt part. Yeah. I mean,
here at one of the 15 rub and tugs, I don't think the elite retreat is offering insurance chits.
I don't think so, because they're not registered massage therapists in those establishments.
No.
They're registering something else, but not that. I don't know. You know, insurance companies, you get your dental or whatever. They parse it out with the product codes and all the rest of that. Because a portion of the experience would probably be a deep tissue massage.
Rubbing. So you could write off the rubbing part.
But the tugging
part. We'd have to say to the therapist, okay, that was a 35 minutes. So you basically rubbed me for what? 28 minutes, and there were 7 minutes of tugging. So really, I should be able to write off about 78% of this massage.
Yeah. And because of the copay, 80% would be paid back. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of that.
Finally, the breakthrough we've all been waiting for, Dan. Oh, by the way, we didn't play our game with Dan. Dan, Birkenstocks or not?
Oh, the to Birk or not to Birk? Mm-hmm. I can't stand the Birks.
Really?
No, they look, they register for me, and I don't know why, but they just, like, dirty.
Dirty
and germy, and I don't know.
What about your sandals with your giant man feet in there?
Mm-hmm. Well, they're not Birkenstocks with cork on the bottom, mm-hmm. and I don't know.
And your question was Birks or not.
Yeah.
Why are you attacking his shoes all of a sudden? We're talking about Birks here.
Okay, you're right. I got it. You know what? Because I got petulant. I was just wanted him to be on my side.
I did text Fred
you did.
How to make a flower garden with
wooden shoes?
Crocs. No, with Crocs. Yeah.
Oh, with Crocs. Okay.
Because he was talking about using up his Crocs, right?
Okay.
I mean, I'm not a big Croc fan either, but the Birkenstocks, they've always been gross to me, especially when they're not on feet. You know, when they're in the entrance and you look at them, you say,
Wow.
That's interesting.
Yeah. I never would have thought of that.
I sort of have the same thing. And again, I don't like them on men. Women, they look okay, but Howard, you might want to think about this.
Oh, yeah, I have. And here's what I've come up with. I don't give two shits. you may call them bad sneakers, my friends, but I love them. Fran Duran's News, Fred, is brought to you by Fran Duran, brought to you by the Government of Ontario.
Every day, more and more people across Ontario are receiving their COVID-19 vaccines. Health Canada-approved vaccines are conveniently available in hospitals, doctors' offices, pharmacies, and mass vaccination sites. And every dose brings us closer to what we've missed. So join millions of Ontarians. Do your part. Get your shot. Visit ontario.ca/bookvaccine. paid for by the government of Ontario.
It's kind of funny this morning before the show started, Fred and I were talking about, you know, several different things, including the fact that we now can wake up every day and check out how much sleep did we actually have the evening before. Because the conversation actually started with, I said, man, I had a great sleep last night. And then you offered, you told me what your health gauge watch told you about how much sleep you had. It can also tell you your blood pressure. It can tell you your blood oxygen and so much more. You know, it's funny. Yesterday, I played golf again, and just for the record, I went from Saturday, I had my best round score in like 4 years, and then yesterday, I had my worst round score. Like, I can't remember the last time I shot a number that high. I was just tired. I was really, really tired, but I walked yesterday, and when I finished, I did like 10,000 steps just walking around this golf course. Anyway, if you haven't got a health gauge yet, you should get one. We're working on a promo code for you. I've got a meeting on Friday with our buddy Tim Daniels from Florence. Anyway, we're going to get that thing settled for you. Healthgauge.com is where you find out more information.
Okay. Do you think a golf swing with the watch on, does it register as a step?
I don't
probably.
Think so.
No. Yeah. No, but even if it does, it that's fine. Because it's a thing.
Why? Because it's movement. I don't know, Dan. Yeah. It's a good question. I don't think it does. I don't think this arm movement. Like, I've...
don't.
Why are you asking? Yeah. Are you saying if you had it on during an event, you might...
Well,
I'm getting some false positive.
Remember, we're talking about a sponsor here, people. Can we just keep it...
Sorry. You'd know if Howard was up around 25 thou a day.
I did. I will say this, though. After a recent interlude, I did check my blood pressure to see what was going on. It's like, okay, still all right. All right. So, so far today, we've got me and Jordan. Our chef, Jordan, were pro Birkenstock. Dan and Fred, anti Birkenstock. And now, with the deciding vote, he's the host of Toronto Mic'd, the podcast, and also the latest in a long line of super beauties that have produced this program, Toronto Mike Boone. Before, Birkenstocks or not?
I'm pro Birkenstock.
There's the deciding vote. There you go.
Very settled in.
Very what from my mic?
Sorry, very practical footwear, very sensible.
Yeah, and you know, you're obviously a hipster, so yeah. Yes. And Mike, the power's out in your neighborhood this morning?
I heard a transformer blow at like 6 a.m. and we're waiting for that to get fixed, so I can't go into my fancy studio, so here I am in the backyard here.
What are you going to do? Don't you have like 19 podcasts recording every day over there?
My next recording is 2 p.m., so I'm hoping they get this figured out by 2.
All right. Before we get into Mike here, I want to congratulate Joan Vistula has just become a Patreon.
Mm-hmm.
And thank you very much, Joan. Mike, we haven't really talked about the Patreon people for a few weeks because and I feel bad because they've been so nice to us. What we should do is just acknowledge.
We're probably due for another giveaway. That charcuterie board was very popular. I think we need another thing like that, I think. So.
By the way, speaking of food, can you just hang around when we're done here? Because I got to tell you, one of the things that we had scheduled will now no longer need to be scheduled.
Hmm. Okay. Maybe we should talk to our friends at iTex and we could get some Aztec art to raffle off.
Or maybe a beautiful rug. You should get Aztec art and rugs.
Speaking of our friend from iTex, everyone on this call is fully vaccinated. Is that right? Dan, have you got your second shot yet?
No, not yet. I'm okay. Scheduled to, but it's not. I got mine later because I'm not in the hot zones. So.
Right.
Yeah.
Which brand are you getting the second time?
I was at Pfizer, so probably Pfizer. I mean, that's what they're offering.
Yeah, I'm getting the third dose is Weezer. I'm getting a Weezer vaccination. I'm getting a triple dose. The third one, Weezer.
Why do you ask, Mike? What are you saying?
I'm one of those guinea pigs who mixed and matched. So my first shot was AZ or AZ, as I like to say.
Yeah.
And then on Tuesday, I got a Pfizer. So
any effects from the second dose at all?
Well, yeah. Last night was a rough night. Like, I was feverish. I had these chills. I had a pretty rough night, actually. So hopefully I'm through it now. But we'll see. I mean, the mixing and matching is kind of the hot topic these days. But it seems to offer possibly better protection against this Delta variant. So, you know, we'll see.
Mm.
Is that why you mixed? Because
No. Like, okay, no.
Yeah, what was your purpose for mixing?
All along, I've said I'll get the first one I can get. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm getting the first one I can get. And I had an appointment for an AZ June 22nd or something. And then Monica got me a Walmart appointment Tuesday, my 8-week anniversary of the AZ, to get a Pfizer. So honestly, I would have got an AZ if that was the Tuesday and the, you know, it was reversed. Yeah.
I'm surprised, though. I'm not surprised, though, I should say that, because most of the people I know that got AZ first and AZ second, whatever symptoms you had originally were certainly diminished with the second shot. Fred had no symptoms. I had slight symptoms and I had almost nothing the second time. But you're the first person I've talked to that did the mixing and matching. And maybe it makes sense because you're introducing another strain and your body has to sort of fight it off or adapt to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny because both times I had a reaction the second night more than the first night. Like, so there's, yeah, I seem to have this
same with
delay.
Me. 24 hours later.
Right. And last night was my second night, and it was worse actually than the first round of AZ. So I guess we'll hear more stories as people do this. But
see, I'd be concerned getting it at Walmart just in case they rolled back the vaccine.
Yeah. He's here. Mm-hmm. Little funny man. He's so goddamn funny.
Howard.
Yeah, well, go ahead, Mike. You were saying, speaking of iTex, and then you went off into a.
Oh, I think that was because I know our iTex friend has some concerns about the vaccination. Mm-hmm. So that was my segue to vaccines.
Huge surprise. But, huge.
Howard, I just want to thank you for being the surprise drop-in special guest last Thursday for the Pandemic Friday. We kicked out parenthetical jams, and you surprised everybody by zooming in and kicking out the first one. So that was really cool.
I was honored. And, you know, I love the reaction that your audience gave was very heartwarming. Some of the crossover fans, Ian Service, Moose Grumpy and such. It was a real fun night. And the panel was great. And you guys, I love the fact that you, the way you set up your studio in the backyard is pretty cool, man. Listen, before we go, let's talk about next week on the Humble and Fred Show. And don't mention the food person, because that's not happening now.
Right. Okay, the big Mike guest on Monday is Murray McLaughlin.
What?
Murray McLaughlin.
That's an old dirty hanky.
Straw hats. The farmer's song, Fred.
Mm-hmm. Right. Do you guys know who he's married to?
Yeah. Yes. We've had him on the show before, dude.
No, I that's a fun fact.
Denise Donlin,
that's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Murray McLaughlin's Monday. Tuesday is the great friend of the show, Jeff Merrick.
Yes.
Oh, cool. Love Jeffrey.
Yeah.
We'll see what the series are at when he comes on.
Hey, speaking of the series, did the Canadians beat Las Vegas the first game?
No.
Oh, they did?
Second game.
So they've only lost one game in like nine of them?
Eight.
Mm-hmm. Jesus.
They can suck me.
Oh, this is interesting. Wednesday is Howard's bud, Kevin Donovan.
Oh, yeah.
Because there was a court decision to open up all the Sherman files, basically.
Nice.
For Honey and Barry Sherman. So he's going to come in and talk about the will and all these things that he was able to get his hands on.
Very cool. And then I think Thursday is Shapiro and who else?
Outworking your feet. Larry Fedorik is going to come in and talk about... He wants to talk to you guys about...
Oh shit, Boone froze up. He wants to talk to us about what? Like that shit, what happened?
What the hell?
Oh, we can just imagine. Stay tuned for that.
What do you want to talk to us about?
Larry Fedorik. We missed it. Mike, you got cut off it. You said Larry wants to talk to us about what?
Okay, Larry wants to talk about whether radio is dead or not.
Okay, great. It'll be fun.
So Bitter Larry Fedoric next Thursday.
Or akin to the Burke conversation, will be radio.
Yes
or no.
Yes or no. All right. Well, that's a great week of... you know what? If I weren't, you know, being part of this program, I'd be listening. This sounds fantastic. Mike Boone, TorontoMike.com for all things Toronto. And, of course, only a few more Pandemic Fridays. Check that out with Stu Stone and Cam
Gordon.
There you go. Thanks to Chef Jordan. Thanks to Dan Duran. Did we do everything we're supposed to do? Yes, we did. So that's it. And we'll be singing along with this song on Monday's program. Mike, thanks. Mike, I appreciate you getting up and doing this. I know you had a tough night because I can see you're all like, you know, look like you're a bit hungover.
It's like a hangover, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. And Dan, what time now? What will happen now when you guys turn off your microphones? Will you then walk over to Fred's and say, "Hey, what do you got to eat?"
No, just won't say that. I'll just wander around and see if Fred's got something to offer. Yeah,
yeah.
I'll go see if my dog's over there because my dog always loves, you know, Fred.
Yeah,
yeah.
He leaves me when Fred arrives.
He's not here yet.
Huh. What's he doing?
Oh, I've lost track of my
dog. Speaking of dogs.
I hope he hasn't up and died.
Like the dog in Mr. Bojangles? The Clifford up. Hey, speaking of dogs, Rachel and I were walking around the East End. You know, we're cool. And there's a little park and ran into a guy with his dog. And it was like a pug something combination pug, a bigger version of a pug. And, you know, you go, "What's your dog's name?" I say, "Stan." I say, "What's your dog's name?" And he said, "Fat Tony."
That's great.
I loved it. I couldn't, and Rachel and I are laughing because I couldn't say, "Come here, Fat Tony. Come on, Fat Tony." Aw, Fat Tony.
That's a Simpsons reference.
Yeah. What is that? Give me that reference. I don't have it.
That's a Simpsons reference. So there's Fat Tony's the mobster on the Simpsons.
Okay. Well, that was cool. It was a cool thing. I'm like, oh, you know, you think you've heard all the dogs' names, and
how do you shorten that up though? Like when you're calling the dog, you know,
Fatoni, Fatoni,
Fatoni, yeah,
Fatoni.
Yeah.
Remember that? We worked with a couple of sisters back in the early CFNY Humble and Fred days. Both very nice, and one of their dogs. Do you remember the two girls, the two sisters, women? I mean,
yes, yes.
Do you remember them, Fred?
Yes, I do.
Oh, do you?
They used to dress very eclectically.
Yes. And both. Yes, of course. See, everyone's remembering them.
How can I not remember her name?
Like, yeah, I can't. I couldn't come up with either of their names under torture. But
Lucia?
Yeah, Lucia.
Lucia.
And her and Lucia's dog's name was D.O.G.
Do you remember the dog's name?
I do. But only because D.O.G., is like the way you spell dog. Figure it out.
Right.
All right.
Yeah. This program brought to you by the Chamber Plan, Government of Ontario, the Retirement Sherpa, Red Light Holland, Gig Sky, Health Gauge, Today's Parent Magazine, Toronto Mike, Dan Duran, and we'll see you all on Monday.